Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and in this hour, crime shows. Later on, the mystery crime series, The Whistler from 1952. But first, it's The Crime Club, a story called Serenade Macabre, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from July 24th, 1947.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Serenade Macabre. Yes, we have that story for you. Come right over. You're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The manuscript is on this shelf. Here it is. Serenade Macabre. The very exciting story of a circus in which the last performance was given by death. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. It is 2 o'clock in the morning, and on the outskirts of the town where the tents have been set up and the red and gold wagons moored, the circus is asleep. A succession of shadows in the moonlight. Quiet. Peaceful. Except for the occasional roar of protest that comes from the throat of Sultan, the untrained lion that Victor Parnell had vowed he would break. And, except for the movements of two people, Louise Parnell and Roy Turner.
Come on, come on. There's the training tent.
Roy?
We'll never have to worry about Victor again when Sultan gets through with him tomorrow morning. What's the matter?
Nothing. I dropped the bottle of glue.
Did it break?
No.
Good. Now listen, kid. You got to pull yourself together. We'll never get another chance.
I can't help it, Roy. I'm frightened.
There's nothing to be afraid of.
What if we should get caught? What if somebody should see us?
I tell you, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Jim Harkness, the night watchman.
He doesn't get to this point till 3 o'clock.
Well, suppose he should decide to change.
For Pete's sake, will you relax? I'm the owner of the circus. I set up the schedule for him.
Oh, I hate that beast.
He's going to be our best friend tomorrow. Come on, we're only about 10 feet in the tent. The whole job won't take more than a couple of minutes.
You know, it's murder, Roy.
So?
The idea of having Victor ripped to pieces by a lion.
You want to get rid of him, don't you?
I could ask him again to give me the horse. Maybe if I keep after him.
He... Duck into the tent.
Roy. Roy, that's...
Get in there.
That's Jim Harkness.
Quiet.
You said he wouldn't be here until 3 o'clock. He's going to see us and he's going to tell Victor. Oh, he mustn't
see us.
If you've got to kill him, he mustn't see us.
Quiet. It's all right, kid. He didn't look in.
Maybe he saw us.
No,
maybe he recognized you and decided not to. Roy, let's forget about it.
Are you out of your mind?
Please. I've got a feeling it's not going to work out.
Do you want to marry me?
Oh, no, I do.
Then let's not forget about it. Give me the key to the train, kid. The key, Louise.
There's no other way.
Not if we're going to get married, babe.
All right.
Hold the flashlight.
I took this off his key ring while he was asleep.
Good thing he was drunk tonight. Swing the light around. Ah, yeah, there's the chair. Now we get to work with the saw.
The police are going to know it's murder, Roy. No chair comes apart in a lion trainer's hand, not even when it's clawed.
Yeah, one leg off. Now we'll go to work in leg number two.
They've got to be strong. The police will suspect me, Roy.
He'll suspect Tom Doyle.
He hasn't got a key to this cage.
He was mad enough to steal it. Victor gave him the whip this afternoon for not feeding the cats on time.
Oh,
this is simple, kid. 2 legs and a gluing job to go, and by noon tomorrow... you hear that, babe? That's Sultan telling you that by noon tomorrow you'll be a widow. There's your wagon, Louise. I'm turning off here.
All right, Roy.
I'll bury the saw and the bottle of glue under the wagon that Tom Doyle's in. And we got nothing to worry about.
I hope you're right. I love you very much.
Yeah. I don't have to tell you how I feel about you. Good night, Russia.
Good night.
Ah!
Please shut up, you ugly. Please shut up. Oh, good heavens.
You're on the line, Louise.
Oh, Victor.
What did you expect to find? The Maharaja of the circus?
I thought you were asleep.
I was. Put the light on.
I'm tired. I want to go to bed.
And I feel like talking. Well, Louise, will I have to get up and put the light on, or will you do it?
I'll do it.
That's better. Now, come here.
Victor, whatever it is you want to say, can't it wait?
You never ask Roy Turner to wait, do you? Of course, he's the boss. The guy who inherited a circus and doesn't know what to do with it. Well, he keeps busy going after my wife.
Please.
Did he tell you tonight how beautiful you are?
I didn't see him. I heard Sultan kicking up a row, so I went down to see what's the matter. Stop it, will you? I'm telling you the truth.
Well, what's the matter, Louise? You're usually a lot calmer than this.
Oh, I'm sick and tired of having you suspect every move I make.
Since when?
You can't turn your back on me without... Oh, shut up, shut up!
Is Sultan getting on your nerves, too?
I can't stand him all day and all night. Cat never sleeps. Victor, I want you to get rid of him.
Sure.
Send him back to the jungle. Kill him. Do anything, but get rid of him.
He cost me a small fortune, Louise.
I don't care. You've got other lions.
Well, he'll be great for my new act.
You'll never break him, Victor. That's one cat that'll never take orders from you.
And I say he will.
You're wrong. You've been trying for weeks and you... Listen, Victor. Kill him tomorrow morning. The first thing tomorrow morning.
I want him for my new act, Louise.
Don't do any more work on him. Don't get into that training cage with him again.
Uh-huh. This is a new twist from you.
I've never asked you to quit breaking a cat before. But this time I know. It can't be done.
Are you afraid of what might happen to me?
He'll kill you one of these days.
That shouldn't bother you.
I don't want you to die.
Well, that calls for a celebration. And a kiss.
No, Victor.
Why not?
Please, leave me alone.
I always told you had a beautiful mouth.
Let me go. Let me
Let's
go.
Let's see how it looks when it's bleeding. Now, turn out that light and go to bed. I've got a big day tomorrow with Sultan. It doesn't seem to bother you this morning, Louise.
I'm getting used to him.
Doesn't take long when you start hoping, does it?
I warned you, if you ever hit me
Tell
again...
Tell that to Sultan. He might decide to help you. Yes, who is it?
It's me, Mr. Parnell, Jim Hartman.
What do you want?
Boss wants to know if you're going to work in that lion today.
Just a minute.
Mr. Turner sent me to ask you if you were going...
Why?
Oh, I don't know, Mr. Parnell. He didn't tell me. Good morning, Mrs. Parnell.
Good morning, Jim.
That cat was howling all night. Sort of gave me the willies. He ain't like the other cats.
He will be. Tell Roy Turner I'll go to work when I'm ready.
Okay.
And tell him I don't want anybody in the training tent when I'm working.
You going to tackle that lion all alone, Mr. Parnell?
Oh, Roy can be there if he wants to. And Louise, of course.
But Mr. Turner don't know nothing about lions, sir. Why, if that big fella should get frisky...
You heard what I said, Jim. Now, go ahead and do it.
Okay. I'm only the night watchman. But if I was in that training cage with that cat, I'd want a lot of people all around with long sticks. Yes, sir. All around.
He's right, Victor.
I'm running my own show, Louise. Finish the coffee and let's get out of here.
In a minute.
Now. You can put your face on later. Roy won't mind seeing you without makeup.
I want you to stop talking about him.
Here's the gun, baby.
Yeah.
Too bad it's not loaded with real bullets, huh? Instead of blanks.
It's too bad. But maybe it won't make any difference to you.
You can take orders like the rest of them, can't you, Roy?
This is your department, Victor. If you don't want anybody around when you're working, it's okay with me. But you're a darn fool.
It's an old habit, pal. Listen to him. He thinks he's still the king. Well, we're going to show him he isn't. Aren't we, Louise?
We?
Sure. You're still my wife, aren't you?
She's not going in that cage with you, Victor.
Here's the key, baby. Open it up.
No.
All right, then. I'll open it up. I'm ready, dear. Come on.
Get out of here, Louise. I'll take care of this lunatic. Put down that whip, Victor.
Sure, right across.
Are you ready? Put it down. You're going into that cage alone.
No.
Alone,
Victor.
And that's where you're going to stay. I got your keys.
Let me out of here, Roy.
That cat will kill me.
Louise, get in the Sultan's tent and open the cage door to the tunnel.
Roy.
Go on before somebody looks in here.
Louise, don't. You and Roy weren't here last night. You spoiled something.
Roy, no.
The key was not where I keep it on the ring. Let me out, will you? I was only kidding about asking you to come in here with me. I wasn't going in
myself. Get out, Louise. You're wasting time.
Louise, I'll give you a divorce. You can marry Roy. I'll do anything you want. Just let me out of here.
I don't believe you, Victor. I don't believe
Good
you.
Good grief, Louise.
Victor, just you and me now.
Roy, you've got to listen.
In a couple of minutes, it'll be just you and Sultan. Grant that chair. I'm going to open the trap door.
Roy, I'll listen to reason. Don't open that trap door. I meant it about the divorce.
Grab the chair, Victor.
Well, then, give me a break. I'll never bother you and Louise
Better
again.
Better get set for company, Victor. Your friend should be here any second. Yeah, battle cry of freedom.
He's in the tunnel, and the trap door's open.
Goodbye, Victor.
The chair. Maybe I can hold him off. Maybe I can drive him back into the tunnel.
And you're keeping there.
You and Louise spoiled something in here last night. I don't know what it is, but... Sawdust. You saw the legs off the chair. He broke the chair. Roy. Roy. Get help. Help.
That's the whole story, Captain Williams. The chair broke in Victor's hand, and before Louise and I realized what had happened, Sultan had knocked Victor down.
Go ahead, Mr. Turner.
Oh, it was the most horrible thing I ever saw. That animal tearing at Victor as if he...
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, Louise, but the police want the facts.
All of them, Mr. Turner. What did you and Mrs. Parnell do while the lion was working on her husband?
Well, there wasn't much we could do, Captain. Louise and I were alone in the training tent. Louise had a gun, but it was loaded with blank cartridges.
Alone, huh? I thought lion trainers never got into a cage unless there was a lot of protection around.
Well, Victor didn't like crowds.
Is that so? That's pretty unusual for a circus performer.
Well, he didn't like him when he was breaking a cat. You can ask anybody outside this office, all the people working for me.
I will, Mr. Turner, when I get around to them. How did you get that animal off, Mr. Parnell?
I opened the trap door of the tunnel. And Louise fired the blanks in her gun. The noise frightened Sultan.
No real bullets?
Lions are expensive, Captain Williams.
But lion trainers aren't.
Sultan was my husband's property, Captain. Victor made the rules, and I kept them.
Uh-huh. Are you feeling better now, Mrs. Parnell?
A little.
Good. I've got a couple of questions for you.
Who fixed
it for that lion to kill your husband?
I can't be sure, Captain, but I think it was...
Yes?
Go on, Louise. The police and I have a right to know who you suspect.
Well, I haven't any proof, but I...
Yes?
Boy, I think it was Tom Doyle who saw that chair and glued the legs on again.
Well, the man who's been feeding the lion?
Yes. You remember what happened yesterday afternoon?
Well, Victor beat him up.
With his whip. And all because Tom didn't feed the cats on time.
Oh, but Louise, that's no reason for murder.
I'm not accusing him, Roy. But late last night, Victor came back to the wagon drunk. He'd gone to town after the show.
Oh, yeah.
What's that got to do with Tom Doyle, Mrs. Parnell?
You see, Captain, there's only one key to the training cage, and Victor always kept it on a ring in his pocket.
Yes?
He was very superstitious about training the cats. He felt that anyone else in that cage at any time might bring bad luck.
That's right, Captain. There's a bug we couldn't shake out of his head.
Just keep going, Mrs. Parnell.
Well, when Victor came back from town, he was very drunk. But he was also very upset. He'd lost the keys.
Happened this morning, didn't he?
Yes. I found them last night outside the training tent.
Oh?
Victor was raving mad because he'd lost them, and I had to go out and look for them. As I got near the training tent, I saw Tom Doyle sneaking away around the tent. And I found the key.
Well, Louise, are you sure it was Tom Doyle?
Yes, Roy. He was carrying something under one arm.
A saw?
I couldn't tell, Captain. But I looked inside the tent. Everything was in order.
Do you think Tom Doyle swiped those keys?
Please, Captain, I'm not trying to build up a case against the man. I'm only telling you what I saw.
Come in.
Excuse me, Captain.
What is it, Ralph?
The boys dug up these two items, sir.
Saw. Blue.
They were buried under a wagon the three guys live in.
Which three guys, Ralph?
Joe Smith, Pete Frenzy, and Tom Doyle.
Where's Tom Doyle?
Him and the other two are in the wagon. Under guard.
All right, we'll go have a talk with him.
I'd like to go with you, Captain.
Sure, come along, Mr. Turner. Do you want to join the party too, Mrs. Parner?
Oh, I don't think you ought to, Louise. Why don't you go to your bungalow wagon and later?
All right, Roy.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Turner, when I got to the scene of the murder, I found you and Mrs. Parnell in the training cage with the body of her husband.
Huh? Sure. We thought he might still be alive.
How would you get in if Mr. Parnell had the only key?
He gave it to me. Just in case.
Let's go, Ralph. You can come along, Mr. Turner, if you still want to. But remember, you listen while I ask the question.
I told you there was nothing to worry about, babe.
But that Captain Williams, did he believe us?
He didn't believe Tom Doyle, kid. The perfect fall guy.
Roy.
Yeah, the Lummox had no alibi for last night, so they took him away.
Then we're in the clear?
Without breaks. Come here.
Why not?
You gave a perfect performance for Captain Williams. How about getting one for me?
Thank heavens I don't have to convince you.
Don't kid yourself, Toots. When it comes to love, I want all the convincing you can give.
Don't. How is that?
Great. As a sample. Now...
Don't rush me, dear. It's been only 3 hours since I became a widow.
Oh, babe, you even look better.
We'll have to be very careful, Roy.
What do you mean?
No marriage until we're far away from this town.
Ah, I had that figured out, too, Louise. So that you have to have nothing to worry about with me.
What's this?
Partnership agreement. I'm giving you a 50% interest in the circus.
Roy.
Don't crowd me yet, honey. I'm not through.
What?
You get my 50% too if I should die.
Oh, you darling. I don't need all this insurance. I wouldn't want it without you.
Hey, here's the catch, sweetheart. I don't expect to die.
You idiot.
Now, come here. How about some more convincing?
Okay.
Come on, Louise. I'm waiting.
Not now, Roy.
What's the matter?
Listen.
What for?
That whistling. I can't stand it, Roy. Ever since last night when Jim Harkness passed the training.
Will you snap out of it?
I'm going to be sure he didn't see us.
He didn't tell Captain Williams, did he?
I just can't seem to get it out of my mind. Roy, we'll have to do something about Jim.
Wait a minute. He's been with the circus for years. I practically inherited...
Well, I don't want him around.
Okay. But believe me, kid, you're making a big fuss about... Come in. What do you want, Jim? Answer me when I talk to you.
I noticed the Sultan stopped complaining after he chewed up Victor. We ain't heard a peep out of him since.
Get out of here, Jim.
Well, that ain't a nice way to talk to a business associate, ma'am.
Business associate?
Shut up, Roy. Louise. What do you mean, Jim?
She knows what I mean, Roy.
I'm Mr. Turner to you.
Not anymore, Roy. I'm not working for you anymore.
You're quitting?
I'm tired of being a night watchman. For a guy like me that used to be a star tumbler... keeping tabs on a bunch of tents and animals. It ain't dignified, Roy. I'm retiring.
What's that got to do with me?
You're going to make my retirement worthwhile. You and Louise.
Jim, what do you want?
Louise, I told you to shut up.
Now, don't get mad at her, Roy. She's only trying to keep the rope off her neck. Tom Doyle ain't no killer. But I can tell the police who is.
Now, look here, Jim. If you got any bluffing to do...
I seen you and Louise in the training tent last night, and... heard you working with a saw.
You don't know what you're talking about, Jim.
Maybe the cops would say different, huh?
You can't prove it, you dirty black mirror. It'll be your word against ours.
Yeah, but whose word's going to count more? I seen where you buried the saw in glue, Roy.
Why don't you tell that to police this morning?
Oh, with the police here?
What are you driving at?
I'm a night watchman. I work all night, and I'm supposed to sleep all day. I ain't seen the police yet.
Didn't they question you?
Well, I wasn't in my bunk all day. I just got back from a snooze in the park. You see what I mean?
He's got us, Roy. Let's find out how much he wants.
Well, you don't have to ask me twice. $50,000.
$50,000?
I want a nice, comfortable retirement, Roy, and I want to start today. Think it over, but don't take too long.
You set up the perfect crime, didn't you? Tom Doyle was going to take the rap for us. Well, Roy, is he?
Well, for Pete's sake, will you leave me alone? You've been pounding at me for an hour. I can't think.
All I want you to tell me is, what are we going to do?
I don't know.
Have you got $50,000 for Jim Hartman?
I told you,
Have you or haven't
Suppose
you?
I have.
Are you going to give it to him?
Do you want me to?
I don't want him to go to the police.
It's about all the cash I have, Louise. If I'd give it
I don't want him to go to the police.
He'll be flat broke. We won't be able to pay salaries.
There'll be plenty of cash coming in.
But not enough to pay off, Louise. We'll be stranded.
Would you rather swing?
Maybe it'll never come to that.
Don't kid yourself. Jim goes to the police, we're through. We can't alibi ourselves out of his story. And we'll never get a chance to call him a blackmailer.
Why call him anything?
Oh, what's the matter with you? Does $50,000 mean so much to you?
Keeps us in business, Angel.
Well, it won't keep us together. Roy, darling, we want to be together, don't we?
Oh, sure,
we want to get married like other people in love. We committed a murder to get that, Roy.
And we won't lose it, kid.
We'll never get there if we take chances now.
I wasn't thinking of taking chances, Louise.
Then you'll give him the money?
No.
Roy!
I got other ideas that'll save us $50,000 and still take care of Jim Harkness.
No.
That's right.
You want Captain Williams back here?
Let him come.
Are you crazy? Another murder at this circus, Roy, while Tom Doyle's in prison. What happens to the case against him?
Nothing. What I got in mind won't be murder, officially.
Oh?
Oh, baby, you're gorgeous when your eyes sparkle.
Tell me what you've got in mind.
Come here, real close, huh? Jim's a pretty old guy.
So?
So he gets dizzy when he looks down from a height. So dizzy he falls down and gets all smashed at the bottom of a cliff.
Over by the river?
How'd you guess?
That's good, Roy. But how do we get him there?
We'll pull him with a 50,000 buck magnet.
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, you don't? Well, then I'll have to tell you, because, kid, you're going to set the traps.
Jim, wake up. Wake up.
Hey, what's Louise.
Where are the other men who belong in this wagon?
They're out working. I was catching some weeds.
I don't want them to find me talking to you. How soon are they coming back?
I never know. Sometimes they knock off for a swig. That can be any time. How about the money?
You'll have to wait until tonight.
Yeah?
Roy's got most of it now, but he's counting on the ticket sale to make up the difference.
I want a full 50,000, Louise.
You'll get it, you dirty blackmailer. Meet me in the park at the top of the hill.
What hill?
Haven't you ever been in this town before?
Oh, this is the first time. Old man Turner never played this circuit when he ran the show.
Oh. Well, there's a hill just outside of town, a public park on top. Be there at 9 o'clock.
Why up there, Louise?
Because Roy doesn't want to be seen talking to you.
Will you be there?
Yeah.
Okay, so will I. But if you got any notions, Louise...
Don't be a fool. I'm not going to kill you. Roy and I could do that any night if we wanted to. You're a night watchman. There's nobody around when you work.
So you thought of that, huh?
Well?
It's a date, Louise. And then, goodbye.
He's on time, all right, Louise.
Give me that package.
You got everything straight?
Yes. I want to open the package and I'll suggest that bench over there. He doesn't know about the cliff.
Now remember, keep his back to me.
I'll remember.
And when I rush him, get out of the way. I don't want to push you over the cliff, too.
He's pretty close, Roy. You better get behind the tree.
Now, no more talk.
Jim?
Yeah. Everything all set, Louise?
Yeah. Here's the package. It's got $50,000 in it.
Is it all here?
You can count it if you don't believe me.
You wouldn't lie to me, would you?
Open the package on that bench. It won't take you long to count it. Come on, I've got a flashlight. Well, Jim?
I'll do that when I get back to my bunk.
Jim, you can save yourself a lot of time. There's no money in that package, just a wad of newspapers.
A trap,
there's
huh?
a cliff behind you, Jim. You're going to have an accident.
Look out, you don't have one first.
He's got a gun, Roy.
I'll take it away from him. I got nothing to lose, have I, Jim?
Stay away from me, Roy. I'll kill you.
Go ahead. I'm not staying away. I'm going to throw you off the cliff.
Maybe, but you're not making me back
off. One more step, Jim.
You're
one more
a murderer anyhow, and nobody's going to punish me for killing a murderer.
Your gun's jammed. Goodbye, Jim.
Roy,
no!
Roy.
Wait! Help! Help your hand, Louise!
Oh, it's too bad, Louise. You had your hand on his sweater and you couldn't hold him.
Oh,
Roy shouldn't have rushed at me, Louise. He should have remembered I used to be a tumbler. Well, it's a bad break for me. I just lost $50,000.
I'm back again, Mrs. Parnell.
Come in, Captain Williams. This has been a week of tragedy, hasn't it? My husband's murder and Roy's death last night. It's surprising I've still got my sanity.
Let me see your hands.
My what?
Your hands.
I don't see what that's got to do with anything.
How did you break that fingernail?
Now, see here, Captain Williams.
I'll tell you. It got caught in Roy Turner's sweater when you pushed him off the cliff last night.
Have you gone out of your mind?
We found the part of the nail that belongs on the finger, Mrs. Parnell. And here's something else we found. Just read it, without putting your fingers on it. It's the carbon copy of a partnership agreement between you and Roy Turner, and it gives you his share of the business after his death.
Roy gave this to me without my asking for it. We were going to be married.
Yeah, well, we're not holding Tom Doyle anymore. We've got you. And the worst that can happen to you is that you'll be tried for one murder and be executed once.
And so closes tonight's story, Serenade Macabre. Stedman Coles wrote the radio script. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Fine. And we'll look for you next week.
Crime Club, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 24th, 1947 on the Mutual Broadcasting System, part of their Wednesday night lineup at 8 for just about a year. The show made its debut on December 2nd, 1946 and wrapped up on October 16th, 1947. This is an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for a broadcast of The Whistler called Episode at Thunder Mountain from January 6th, 1952 on CBS.
The Whistler.
Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. And now, the Whistler's strange story. Episode at Thunder Mountain. Moving down the icy slopes of Thunder Mountain, the young couple on skis could scarcely be aware of the fact that their downhill progress was being observed through the telescopic sights of a high-powered rifle from the ridge above. And then as they pulled up to a stop behind a protective screen of tall fir trees, Paul Cameron caught his attractive partner in his arms.
Oh, you had fun, darling.
Of course. Oh, I've had a wonderful afternoon, Paul.
So have I. Come here.
Paul, darling.
Will I see you tomorrow, Helen?
Yes. Same place.
Yeah.
I'd better go now.
Oh, no. So soon?
I must, darling. It'll be dark before long.
All right. I'll wait here till you reach the lodge before starting down.
Till tomorrow, Paul. Bye.
A lovely, exciting girl, isn't she, Paul? Helen Whiteside, the young woman you've chosen to be the next Mrs. Cameron. You stand there puffing slowly on a cigarette and watch as Helen races down the slope. And then she's gone from sight. You wait another few minutes until you're certain she's reached the bottom of the slide. And then step out from behind the tree. And as you do,
The bullet ricochets off the tree above you, and then another. You leap forward, hurl yourself down the slope, racing faster and faster over a sea of white, swerving, twisting crazily. And around you, one bullet after another kicks up a tiny cloud of snow.
Hello, Mr. Cameron. What'll it be?
Scotch, as usual. Double.
Right. Oh, by the way.
Yeah?
Your wife was in looking for you.
Oh? She was?
She was here a couple of minutes ago. Thinks she went to make a phone call.
Thanks. Hurry it up with that drink, will you, please?
Sure thing. How was skiing today, Mr. Cameron?
What?
How was skiing?
Oh. Oh, it's all right.
You know, I just don't see what kind of kick you fellas get out of sliding down them hills like that. Here you are, Mr. Cameron.
Thanks.
Oh, Paul, darling.
Oh, Sandra.
I have one of those too, Joseph.
Okay, Miss Cameron.
Oh, Paul, I just called the Frasers. They can come.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And the Mortons, too. They weren't doing a thing.
And apparently we are, huh?
Of course, darling. I'm giving a little dinner party at the lodge for... Oh, I didn't tell you.
No, you didn't.
Well, guess who dropped in on us? He's going to stay for the entire weekend.
Your brother, Nicky.
Well, that's right. How'd you guess?
Oh, it's just a hunch, Sandra. Yeah, I had a feeling today that my dear brother-in-law was around, close by.
Yes, Paul. From the moment that first bullet whistled over your head on the ski slope this afternoon, you knew that Nicky was in the vicinity, didn't you? That he was the one who had tried to kill you. His second attempt in as many months, Paul. Each of them unsuccessful. But you know you've got to do something about it before your luck changes. That evening at the dinner party for your wife's friends, Nicky is his usual charming self, dominating the gay, light-hearted conversation. Finally, the two of you meet alone on the terrace, overlooking the valley.
Surprised to see me, Paul?
No, Nicky. Can't say that I am. I rather expected you'd show up.
Well, hope you don't mind.
Should I?
Well, after all, I have one's brother-in-law come barging in this way. It seems I've been popping in on you and Sandra quite frequently. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, cigarette?
Oh, thanks. Yeah. The truth of the matter is, Paul, I worry a lot.
Oh?
About Sandra, I mean.
Why should you?
Well, things are always happening to Sandra. Accidents of sorts. Like last week, that car crash.
Well, you can hardly blame her for that. Something went wrong with the steering gear.
Yes, I know. But there have been other things. For example, the time the sun lamp fell into that tub of water. She could have been electrocuted.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I just can't bear the thought of anything happening to Sandra.
Oh, I quite understand. As you said, Nicky, you're very fond of her.
Yes, I am.
And, of course, Sandra is a very wealthy woman.
Oh, we're both well aware of that fact, aren't we, Paul? Her first husband was a fine fellow. It was rather decent of him to leave her all that money, too, wasn't it?
It was quite a break for you.
Oh, can I help with it? Sandra's a very generous woman. After all, I am her brother.
All of which entitles you to a very substantial allowance every month.
Oh, you've tried time and time again to talk her out of it, too, haven't you?
I'll be ridiculous.
Oh, but you have. The more she spends on Brother Nicky, the less remains in Kitty, so to speak.
Don't be absurd.
Oh, I know you married Sandra for her money. Nothing else, Paul. You just can't stand to see any of it being... squandered on Brother Nicky.
Now, look, Nicky...
I suppose you're going to tell me you're madly in love with Sandra. Huh?
Why should I tell you anything?
You don't have to. You're in love with Helen Whiteside. You see, I know all about Helen. Now, don't bother to deny it, old man. I'm well aware of what's been going on between you and that little redhead. I have been for some time.
Then, why haven't you told Sandra?
Oh, no, Paul. I'm not a complete fool. Well, Sandra's fond of me, it's true, but she happens to be head over heels in love with you, and if I dared suggest that you were... two-timing her, well, she's probably checked me out on my ear, and there would go my lovely little allowance.
Suppose I were to tell Sandra that you had tried to kill me on two different occasions.
I try to kill you? Oh, that's crazy.
Oh, no, it's not. The first time was
You can prove I tried to kill you?
No. No, but I know you did. Suppose I told Sandra that, Nicky.
Oh, she wouldn't believe it. Now, dear, sweet brother Nicky. Oh, no, no. As a matter of fact, she might become quite angry with you, old man.
I think I will tell her.
I know you won't.
Oh?
No, Paul, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave Sandra out of it. And just settle things between the two of us.
All right, Nicky. We'll do as you say. Settle things just between the two of us.
It's out in the open now, isn't it, Paul? The duel between you and Sandra's brother, Nicky. A duel you're sure can only end in death for one of you. Nicky's well aware of what you've been up to, isn't he? Yes. He's certain you've tried to kill Sandra, inherit her money, and marry Helen Whiteside. And you know he's going to try to prevent that. Because as long as his sister remains alive, he can count on a very handsome allowance from her each month. It's either you or Nicky, isn't it, Paul? But just how you're going to rid yourself of Nicky isn't quite clear to you yet. But late the following afternoon, as you're sitting alone at the lodge, before the huge fireplace, sipping a drink, your wife, Sandra, comes in.
Who is that you're talking to outside, Sandra?
Mr. Savelli. You know he's one of the ranchers in the valley. Also a deputy sheriff.
Oh, is that so? Well, what did he want?
Oh, nothing in particular. He and his men were just passing by. They've been trying to track down some mountain lions. Had an awful lot of trouble with them lately. Attacking the flocks and so on.
Oh, I see.
And you know, Paul... smooch over, darling.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I've had the most wonderful idea... we could organize a hunt and get all our friends here together and hunt mountain lion. We could all meet here early in the morning and have a big breakfast and then join Mr. Savelli and the other ranchers.
Say, that's not a bad idea.
Even stay overnight if we wish.
Yeah?
He tells me there's some old abandoned cabins up on one of the ridges. Huh? They're using them as headquarters.
Well, do you suppose the Frasers would come along?
Oh, I know they would.
Yeah?
And the Fenways.
Yeah, the Fenways.
Marge and Jim Morton, too.
So, well, wait a minute. How about your brother? How about Nicky? You suppose he'd like to join the hunt?
Of course, he'd love it. How nice of you to think of him, Paul.
Oh, not at all, dear. And I think we should start getting things organized. Right away.
It's perfect, isn't it, Paul? If only Nicky, Sandra's brother, will agree to go along. And you're very pleased when you learn that he has agreed, at Sandra's insistence. And as the plans for the hunt begin to take place, you find time to steal a few moments with Helen Whiteside again. It's a guarded conversation in the main lodge. As you sit down near her, pretend to be reading a magazine.
We shouldn't be talking here, Paul.
Never mind. Just pick up that paper. They won't even notice us. Helen, I can't meet you tomorrow. I'm going to leave the lodge for a day or so. I'm going along on this hunt they're organizing.
Doesn't matter, Paul.
What?
I said it doesn't matter. I've been thinking this over. You and me. It isn't going to work.
What are you talking about?
I'm not content. Stealing moments together like this. It isn't fair to any of us. Me or you, your wife.
Now, Helen, listen to me. No, wait. Someone's looking this way. Now, listen,
Paul,
Helen.
Paul, you listen. I'm leaving the lodge in the morning. I'm going back to town.
Oh, Helen, please,
Paul,
don't.
It's perfectly obvious that... Well, that you're not going to be able to do anything about Sandra.
Helen, that isn't true.
Oh?
No, please, please, just give me a little time.
Paul,
no, don't ask me to explain anything. It's just that I'm quite certain that things are going to be different. And soon, Helen. Very soon.
Yes, Paul, you do feel certain that the time has come. And Helen's attitude convinces you of another thing. The schedule for disposing of your wife, Sandra, must be moved up, too. That night, the plan begins to take shape in your mind. It's pretty well in focus, isn't it? As you join the others at breakfast early in the morning and prepare to set forth on the pack trip up into the lonely reaches of the mountain. You have a heavy hunting rifle with an easy reach on one of the pack mules. Nicky has one, too. But no one in the gay, light-hearted party realizes what each of you has in mind. Nicky makes it clear to you at one of the stops along the winding, arduous trail. He waits until you're alone and slips up beside you.
Bartending for the last act, that's all.
What are you talking about?
Oh, stop it, old man. I think I haven't noticed the way you keep eyeing that hunting rifle. Just itching to grab it, huh? Blast my head off.
You're out of your mind. I'm not that much of a fool with all these people along.
Oh, that'll be a later time. No problem. We split up for the hunt, maybe tomorrow. Huh? Yes, that might be ideal.
Look, this Cervelli, he's a deputy sheriff, you know.
He's a good witness to the little accident. Nothing like having the law on your side.
Well, I'll tell you, you better not try anything.
Is this a truce offer? Or just something to throw me off my guard? Oh, all right, Paul. I'll believe you for the next 12 hours anyway, huh? Because you really wouldn't try anything in a big group like this, huh? Ah, but tomorrow...
Much as I'd relish it, Nicky, I have no such plans for you.
Well, we'll see. Right now, I must see to the needs of our mutual benefactor. My dear sister, Sandra. Ta-ta, old man.
All right, folks, we'll have to hit the trail again. Come on.
It's frightening, isn't it, Paul? Nicky's cold, self-assured approach. And the terrible realization that he's a much better marksman than you. But you have a plan. Hours later, as the pack train finally arrives at the lonely ridge and the tiny group of cabins, you feel quite certain that everything is perfect for your plan. There's just one thing to do, isn't there? One idea to be planted to make your story airtight later on. You attend to it if the group breaks up to take over the cabins for the night.
Oh, Jim. Hey, Jim Morton.
Huh?
Jim, come here,
oh,
will you?
Oh, yes, Paul. What is it?
Well, I just wanted to ask a little favor of you. Would you and Marge take the cabin next to ours?
Oh, sure. I've seen what difference it makes. They all look pretty much run down.
No, well, no, it isn't that, Jim. It's, well, frankly, I don't want Sandra's brother, Nicky, so close to us.
Oh,
look, I know how it must sound, and I hope you won't say anything.
Of course not.
Nicky and Sandra had a big blow-off back at the lodge yesterday. Well, it was about money.
Look, you don't have to tell me.
Well, thanks, I know that. You're a good friend, Jim, to Sandra and to me. Well, actually, I may be just imagining things, but this Nicky is a strange chap, and I'm afraid for Sandra. It's better to play safe anyway.
We'll be right there.
Good.
Matter of fact, it looks as if he's taking the cabin that's farthest away.
Huh? Oh, well, that's good. Well, it's like I said, maybe nothing to it. Just forget about it, will you, Jim, that I ever said anything?
Sure thing. And now I better give Marge a hand with a sleeping bag.
Yeah, go on. I'll do the same thing. Thanks, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Just a few words, Paul. Something that Jim will forget for the moment, but something he's sure to remember when you need him most, when the rest of your plan is carried out. The next step is a simple one, isn't it, Paul? The window inside the cabin you share with Sandra. She pays no attention as you check it, casually, see that it can be raised. It can. You close it again. That's all for now, isn't it, Paul? But a few hours later at dinner with the others around a big campfire, you're very attentive to Sandra and notice with pleasure that Jim Morton keeps watching her brother, Nicky. It's all going together perfectly, isn't it? An hour or so later, Mr. Cervelli suggests that everyone turn in, get a good night's rest. And they all agree. Later, in the cabin, you pace the floor as Sandra stirs restlessly in bed.
Paul, why are you pacing? Aren't you going to sleep?
No, not right away, Sandra.
Have all the others turned in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bonfire was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was all right.
Paul, is something bothering you? You've been very quiet ever since we left the lodge.
No, it's nothing. I'm going outside, Sandra. Have another cigarette before I turn in.
Well, don't wander far. Mr. Cervelli said the cliff in back of our cabin is quite dangerous.
Yeah, I know all about the cliff, Sandra. Drop of several hundred feet. Well, I'm not thinking of jumping off yet, you know.
Oh, Paul, please, that isn't funny. You're not really happy with me, are you?
Let's not discuss it at this hour, Sandra.
I know, you're tired. You're tired of me, of everything. Something else my money couldn't really buy. All right, Paul. This time, when we get back, we'll call it quits.
No, wait a minute, Sandra.
Good night, Paul. Like you, I'm too tired to discuss it.
Oh, but Sandra... Well, all right, go on to sleep. I'll be back soon.
Mm-hmm. If you needed any further urging, Sandra has provided it, hasn't she, Paul? Suggesting that the two of you can call it quits, as she puts it. But that wouldn't be enough, would it? Helen is expensive. Sandra's money is very necessary. Yes. And everything is clear and simple now, as you walk quietly to the far end of the row of quiet cabins and knock softly on the door of the last one.
Who is it?
It's me, Nicky. Paul, open up.
What do you want?
It isn't what I want. It's Sandra. She wants to talk to you.
Now?
Now. Well, now, just don't worry. I'm not armed. This still isn't the time or the place.
Why does she want to see me? What have you told her?
Everything, my dear brother-in-law.
You're a fool, Paul.
Perhaps. Perhaps not. Well, you shouldn't keep Sandra waiting. She's quite annoyed with you.
I'll wait till I get a coat, some boots.
Yeah, and your rifle, Nicky, you better bring it along in case you have any doubts about me.
That's not a bad idea.
I thought you'd agree.
I don't see any light in the cabin. Are you sure, Sandra?
Well, look closer, Nicky. There's a light.
He turns, peers through the darkness toward the cabin. And in that moment, your hand closes around a heavy rock in your overcoat pocket. You lift the rock high.
Sorry, Nicky. This is as far as you go.
Quickly, you lift Nicky's limp form, carry him to the edge of the cliff and back of the cabin. A little shove and the first half of your plan is complete, isn't it, Paul? But only the first half. You hurry back to the spot where you killed Nicky, don a pair of leather gloves, pick up Nicky's rifle and enter your cabin. You freeze for a moment as Sandra stirs uneasily in her sleep. Then you undress quickly, slipping into your pajamas and robe. You cross the room, stand near the window as you raise Nicky's heavy hunting rifle. And then... a moment later, you're across the cabin and outside. You hurl the rifle out into the snow and then shout at the top of your lungs.
Jim Morton, Mr. Tavilli, help! Help somebody, come quick, help! Help!
Please, can't you do something for her, for Sandra?
Now, easy, son, easy. It's too late to do anything. Now, try to tell us again what happened. Slowly.
Well, Nicky and Sandra, they had a terrible row yesterday back at the lodge.
That's right. Paul told me about it this afternoon.
I had no idea he'd do anything like this. He came down here. He tried to get in. We wouldn't open the door. I thought he'd gone away.
But he went to the window, you said.
Yeah, that's right. He raised it and fired point blank at her, and then he ran. And I went out after him, caught him for a second. He struggled over the gun. He let go of it and broke away.
Only he didn't know where he was running.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe he didn't care by then. He just went right over the cliff.
That's a 200 or 300 foot fall. Well, probably just as well. He'd never have got away with it.
Poor Sandra. I should have told you about the quarrel.
Easy, Paul. Wasn't your fault.
No. I've seen things like this before, Mr. Cameron. Fella gets crazy mad like that, maybe he'd even been drinking. We don't know.
Yeah, but if I hadn't let Nicky come along, don't
he'd
you
have
see
found another way, probably. Nothing to blame yourself for, Mr. Cameron. Not much use blaming anybody now.
Well, Paul, it's all over, isn't it? And in a way that you're certain leaves you in the clear. It's simple, isn't it? So simple that even the slow-thinking sheriff's deputy, Mr. Seville, can have no difficulty in adding things up. You're sure he will have to reach the inevitable conclusion that Nicky killed his sister out of frustration when she threatened to cut him off without a cent. You stand just outside the cabin now, the stunned, grief-stricken husband dully recounting your story to the little group of Sandra's friends as inside, Mr. Servilli examines the position of the body, the cabin, and then finally comes to the open door and calls to you.
Mr. Cameron, would you step in here for a moment?
Oh, yes, of course.
It's all right. I've covered her.
Thanks.
Skip it. It was out of respect to her, not you, Cameron.
What?
It was an interesting yarn you told out there in front of all those people.
Yarn? See here, Mr. Savilli.
You said Nicky came to the cabin a little while ago. That you wouldn't unlock the door for him. You said he raised the window. Fired point blank at her. Thoughtful of him to close the window after he shot her, wasn't it?
No. I closed it. I thought she might still be alive, and I didn't want to take any chance on her getting killed.
You made up quite a story, Cameron. But it's not going to help you. You shot your wife.
Oh, now, look here, Savilli. I won't stand here and be accused by an amateur detective who thinks...
Save it, Cameron. And listen. You see, these cabins aren't used much. You should have thought of that because this window hasn't been raised in the last 3 hours. Maybe you raised it before then to check it. I don't know. But I do know it hasn't been raised in the last 3 hours.
But it was, I tell you.
Come here, Cameron. Have a closer look.
What?
Here. Along the bottom of the sash.
Spider web.
Yes. Spun by one of the more permanent residents of this old cabin. He's been busy for at least 3 hours. Takes these spiders up here that long to spin a web.
A spider. Little thing like a spider.
A very busy little spider. I'd say the web he spun between the sill and window sash provides enough evidence for even an amateur detective to make an arrest. Wouldn't you?
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 6th of January, 1952 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.